KFSR presents First Ladies Focus, the personal stories behind people who love Fresno State. Featuring Fresno State's First Lady, Mrs. Mary Castro, and KFSR Program Director, Julie Logan, 90.7 KFSR.
Good morning and welcome. I'm Julie Logan, along with my co-host, Fresno State's First Lady, Mrs. Mary Castro. Good morning, Mary.
Good morning, Julie.
We're excited to have another very special guest with us today, and as always, I'll let you make the introductions.
Thank you. I feel very honored for us to welcome into the studio Dr. Peter Smits. He serves as the Vice President for University Advancement at California State University, Fresno. He is a very seasoned professional, and we'll get to hear more about his story. But first, thank you, Dr. Smits, for being here.
Thank you. I'm glad to be here. You know, tomorrow's my last day.
I know. I had to catch you before you ran out the door for
that's right.
For all the fun that you're going to be having in retirement. And I know you have a lot of great plans, so it's going to be exciting to share that with
the community. Well, it's nice to be here.
It's nice to meet you. I wish you'd come by the radio station before you were on your way out.
Well, I know where it is now, right?
Yeah, you do.
All right, now you can find it. So you have been a huge part of Fresno State for decades. And Joe and I have had the privilege of going in the last few weeks to several of the send-off retirement parties. And one thing that really impressed me about your retirement parties was how excited your staff was to surprise you. Not that they were excited you were leaving,
right,
but they
right.
were, they a long time ago, they started working on projects for videos and really wanted to keep it secret and really wanted to have it be something fun for you. How has that experience been for you going to these different events and kind of feeling the love from your staff?
Well, I first knew that they were up to something. I mean, I would go into offices and they'd say, oh, stop talking. Here he is. So I knew that there were surprises in store. But it was very special. I mean, it was very emotional for me. It was a lot of it was lighthearted. And
yes.
They said some things that I certainly didn't expect. I was accused of being very neat, if you remember that.
Yes.
Which my wife does not believe is true.
I know.
But it was great. It was very very exciting, and it was real sweet on their part.
And they did a big play on your middle initial that no one knew what your middle name was all this time.
Yeah, that was fun.
And that was cute. And then I liked how there was one part of the video where they were going along and everybody was trying to guess what your middle name was, and people were coming up with different words to try to figure out what your name was. And then there was a part of the video where it turned from being a roast into being more sentimental. And I felt like all the compliments that came from your staff and from other professionals on the campus that have worked with you so long, they were really heartfelt and genuine. And, you know, sometimes at going away, you think that everybody is saying as nice of things as possible before you leave. But I didn't get that impression with you because I felt like their hearts were in it. There were a lot of tears. There was a lot of laughter. And it was a very good balance. And I think that that goes to show the type of person that you are and the type of relationships that you build with people, which is a cornerstone to your field. And one thing that impressed me was that in advancement, how seriously you take the trust that donors put in you and in your department when they choose to be a part of the success of Fresno State. And a quote that I have from you says, "To me, ethical stewardship means that we take great care to ethically and carefully use the resources that others give to us." And I think that's important for people to know that you really value the fact that they've chosen you to be the person to help with a scholarship. Or tell us a little bit more about the whole process of advancement and what it takes to be the type of professional that you have become.
Well, I've often said that people don't give money to us because we need the money. They give money to us because they have a need to do something on behalf of the university. Our jobs really are to connect passions, things that that faculty and students and staff are passionate about with people in the community who can share a like passion, whether it's for a scholarship or a research program or something or building or a room. So I've always had the philosophy that I have not spent my career asking people for money. I've spent my career building relationships between the universe and people who want to invest in it. So once someone adopts that passion and then they invest, they use their own assets to invest in what you do, there's the trust relationship. You need to make sure that you accomplish what the donor wants to have done.
Right.
As much as what we want to have done.
Mm-hmm.
So you can't violate that trust. You can't say, well, thank you very much for your gift to name this classroom and then use the money for something else. You just cannot do that.
No. And you're part of the big campaign that the campus finished last year. And tell us about the type of motivation or that you have when you're in a campaign setting. How is it different than when you are fundraising as you normally do?
Well, we like to say that a campaign is really nothing more than a full-fledged development program in high gear.
Okay.
So it campaigns actually have a beginning and an end. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, you're just always doing it.
Right.
They have a higher sense of excitement and purpose and motivation. It's taking everything up to a much higher level. Mm-hmm. And that's what we did with the campaign.
That's great. And you were so successful that you went beyond your goal by 7% and you raised $214.2 million for the campus.
Yeah, that was something else. It was kind of interesting when we first started talking about the campaign. Must have been 2002. We had actually a funny experience with the deans because we'd never had a campaign before. Some of us had been through one, but the campus had never had one. So we said to the deans, we want you to put together a list of what you want to raise money for.
Mm-hmm.
And they said, well, that sounds like a wish list. And I said, it is.
Right.
Put down what you'd like to raise money for. Well, the total was $980 million.
Wow.
And everybody sort of said, wow. But realized that we don't have the capacity to raise $980 million. Mm-hmm. So we had to make priorities.
Yes.
And that's where it became interesting. Deans and faculty and administrators and students even had to decide, so what is more important than mm-hmm. something else? And when the list of priorities was developed, that's when it really got into high gear.
That's a great tool to figure out exactly what you're trying to accomplish.
Yeah. Well, every dean, of course, wanted a new building.
Right.
And none of them at the end got one because they would have to be completely funded with private dollars.
Mm-hmm.
And in the CSU, that's not easy to do.
Right. Share with us some of the projects that were able to happen because of the campaign.
Well, more than $100 million was raised for student scholarships.
Wonderful. That,
and that's phenomenal.
That's fantastic.
We did get the Jordan Research Center,
a
single gift.
And we just had the groundbreaking from that. And that
last
was
week, yep.
Wonderful. Exciting.
It was almost a $30 million gift from two brothers who'd never stepped foot on campus.
Wow.
They'd never been here. But they developed a long-term relationship with a faculty member in ag. And over the course of time, they came to understand what we do here in agriculture
mm-hmm.
and developed a passion for what we're doing here in agriculture. And when they both passed away, they left us in their will for $30
million. Oh, that was so generous of them.
There are a few other buildings that came as a result of the project. The Myers Sports Medicine Center is state-of-the-art, very much needed by athletics. The lead gift on that was Marvin Myers, and it's been fun to watch him enjoy that project. The new farm market came as a result of a gift from Ruth Gibson in honor of her parents.
And I know the community loves that market.
Just absolutely love it. I mean, it's we've had the farm market for a long time, but it needed a new home. And her gift,
too.
Single gift,
beautiful.
Yep, did that. So that was phenomenal as well.
Great. Well, we're going to go back to the beginning. I know you had a life before Fresno State, and we'll share some of that. So you were actually born in Watertown,
New York. Right.
Okay. And you stayed in New York until you went through college, all the way through your master's. Is that right?
Well, no. My dad was in the military. He, God rest his soul, my dad was in the 82nd Airborne in World War II and jumped in Normandy. He was at the Battle of Bastogne. He was in Italy. He was in North Africa. He had quite an experience as I guess he was 19.
Wow, that's a book right there.
Yeah, it is a book right there. And so when he got back, he was out of the military very briefly and then reenlisted in the Air Force and had a 32-year career in the Air Force.
Oh, my goodness.
So we moved places. I actually went to high school in Louisiana.
Oh.
And people ask me why I don't have an accent. And I say, well, I learned to talk before I went there. And so we were in Canada, we were in Florida, in Louisiana. And when it came time for me to go to college, we were still state residents in New York. So I went to New York for college. They went off to Germany.
Oh, my
great.
Goodness.
That's where I spent my summers.
Did you have other extended family members, cousins that lived there in New York? Or you were the lone person?
I had extended family. I had aunts and uncles and cousins and so forth.
Great.
But, my whole family went to Europe when I went off to college. So
it's usually the reverse.
Yeah.
The student goes to Europe and the family stays
back. Exactly.
And when you speak of family, you had your parents are Fred and Marge. You had your brother, Steve, and you have two sisters, Karen and Kathy. Tell me about the atmosphere in your family growing up, about the importance of education.
Well, my wife, Sue, thinks of my family as the Leave It to Beaver family. And truly, it was a very happy home. Dad was a great role model, and Mom raised the kids. Did a pretty good job, I think, mostly. Yeah. And so my mother and father never actually went to college, got a degree in college. My mother went to St. Lawrence University. Mm-hmm. My father did some work at Princeton, but they never got a degree. But education was always very important to them and therefore to us. Mm-hmm. And it was always expected that we'd go to college. I was the first in the family to go to college, to get a degree. And I think all four siblings have bachelor's degrees. Three of the four of us have master's degrees, and I have a doctorate, and I have my sister is about to get hers. So
you
could sort of paper a wall with diplomas in my house.
Well, that's wonderful. Yeah. And your parents would be so proud of you, all of you, for that. You were telling me that your brother Steve was the department director in the Health and Human Services for the whole state of New York.
Yeah, he was, I can't remember exactly the title, deputy director of Health and Human Services for the mm-hmm. state of New York, which was a huge job. I remember thinking one day that his budget was bigger than the entire CSU budget. That's a lot of money.
Right. So while you were in college, you met beautiful Sue, your wonderful wife.
And I did.
She is such a welcoming type of person. I remember when Joe and I first arrived here, you were the first person from the cabinet to take me to lunch.
That's right.
And I thought, oh no, this poor guy drew the short straw. But it was so fun. It was nice of you. And I really appreciated you taking the time out of your busy schedule to take me to lunch, kind of orient me to the campus, let me know some things that were going on and fill out if there was any way that I could be a part of it. And I really appreciate that you extended that generosity towards me, and it made me feel welcome. And then over the first couple of months when we were meeting the spouses and the other cabinet members, it was always nice that Sue was always a person who, one of the first people in the room who would greet me. She made me feel welcome. And then seeing the close relationship that you had with the Oliarios and with other members of the cabinet, it just really made a difference as a person transitioning into this group of people who had worked together for so long.
Right.
It was important. And I just wanted to thank you for that and for making that effort to make me feel welcome and be a part of the campus. Now, the two of you, you met at college and you were married in 1972. You just celebrated your 42nd anniversary.
Sorry.
Did you do something special for that?
We went out to dinner. I mean, we do have a trip to Paris planned in a couple of weeks. Well, actually, about a month.
Oh, my goodness.
So that's my retirement decompression trip. Oh, we're going to spend about 12 days in France. And that's combination retirement and anniversary.
Do you speak French?
No, but actually Sue speaks a little French. She took it in high school, and we're doing that Rosetta Stone thing, which is it's pretty good.
Are you trying to force yourselves to speak French to each other at home?
No. She is much farther along than I am, and it would be a one-sided conversation.
Okay. Well, what are some of the things on that trip that you're looking forward to experiencing that you haven't?
Well, it's a river cruise from Paris to Normandy. And most of those river cruises have themes, and the theme of this one is impressionistic art, which Sue is really into.
Oh, beautiful.
So the little boat will stop along the Seine where the famous painters stopped to paint in the summertime.
How fun.
Yeah, so.
That sounds great.
Wow.
She's especially looking forward to that. I like it, but yes. I'm really looking forward to Normandy.
Uh-huh.
We've been there a couple times, and it's a magical place. It's very sad, but very heroic as well. So,
Yes. So
we'll spend, I think, it's 3 days in Paris and then 8 or 10 days on the river.
That
should be fun.
Like
and then when you get back from Paris, you're actually writing a book, and you're going to continue to work on that?
Well, I haven't started the writing yet. I have to do field work, actually. I've been involved for the last couple of years in a group of folks looking at the issue of how campuses raise money.
Mm-hmm.
And so the book is to explore best practices in fundraising.
Good.
I'm hoping to visit 20 to 30 schools around the world, actually, if I can get it funded, and then write the book about best practices in fundraising. So it should be fun.
Will Sue be going with you on all those treks?
Well, I don't know. She is retired as assistant superintendent of schools here, but she's back at the university supervising student teachers. So there'll be some trips, I think, that she can go on. She'll want to go on the one to Oxford and Cambridge, but we'll see.
That's great. Well, it's wonderful that you can now have this time to not have the pressure of the day-to-day, and you can choose all the things that you'd like to do.
That's what I'm looking forward to.
What type of hobbies did you have growing up?
Well, mostly music. I've been playing trumpet now for 50 years.
Wow.
I don't play much lately, but so music was one of my biggest hobbies. Mm-hmm. And since then, I've taken up gardening, and I love my roses. I've taken up golf. I hate my score, but it's, most of us are not very good at golf. But I enjoy physical activity and exercising and that sort of thing.
Well, you mentioned your roses, and I don't want to let that pass without talking about you take caring for roses to a different level. I've heard you're involved in grafting and developing new strains yourself in your own garden.
Well, I play around with it just a little bit. I don't think I could make a living at that. For me, it doesn't work very well, but I'll keep trying.
And so you have at least 40 different varieties?
I have 40 different plants. Most of them are hybrid. Some of them are climbers, but they're all different colors and shapes. So
that's wonderful. Yeah. And right now is the perfect time for them to bloom.
Can't stay ahead of them right now. They're just very prolific right now.
That's great. We'll have to put up some photos of your garden on the website.
Absolutely.
We can do that, but give me a couple of months after I retire to get the place cleaned up a little bit.
It doesn't have to be perfect, but I've heard other people say that it's a beautiful garden and that the effort that you put into it really shows. So that I think that our listeners would love to hear about that. So what is it about higher education? What inspired you to go into the field of higher education and then specifically into advancement?
Well, when I was an undergraduate, I had a student assistantship in the student activities office. Mm-hmm. So I was working on almost a daily basis with young professionals in student affairs. Mm-hmm. And I always thought they had a cool job. So as I was graduating from college, the dean of students said to me, if you can get into grad school, I'll give you a graduate assistantship.
Wow.
I said, well, okay. So I got into grad school and did a degree in student personnel services and went into student affairs. I was ran a student union building, director of student activities. I was the dean of students. And then I got involved in a project with Special Olympics. I was the director of the International Games in 1979, a long time ago, working with the Kennedy Foundation and Eunice Shriver. That was great fun. And that required raising a lot of money.
Yes, I'd imagine.
So when that project was over, the president said, I need to keep you raising money. So I went out of student affairs and into development and have done it ever since.
And did you have any mentors that you felt were great role models in the way that you wanted to raise money or in the way you wanted to develop relationships with people?
Well, I think I had two or three role models as educators. Mm-hmm. My first real role model was the president at the University of New York in Brockport when I first went there as a student activities director. He was a ex-colonel in the Marines and had a PhD from somewhere, I don't know, but it was the college president, and he was very inspirational to me. He was the one who said, you need to go into fundraising.
Wow.
I worked for a time with a vice president for student affairs who one day walked into my office with an application for a doctoral program, and I said, I don't want to do this. He said, I don't care if you don't want to do this. You're going to go get your doctorate. And I said, I really don't want to do that. He said, it doesn't matter. It's sort of a key to a long-time career in higher education. So I did, and he was very instrumental.
Uh-huh.
And then I worked for John Welty for almost 30 years in two different places. So John was a great role model for me, too. So I had a chancellor at LSU, just a wonderful, fine Christian man who was a great example for me. And so I've been blessed, actually, with having some people in my life who were great mentors and role models.
And have you been able to maintain those relationships over time so that you could go back and talk to them when you had questions or when you had challenges?
For the most part, yes.
Wonderful.
Dr. Brown now has got to be 96, so I don't talk to him very often, but yeah.
Right, but at different times along the way. I think that's important for people to know that when you leave a place or when you move, the relationship doesn't have to end. And especially when you have someone that you think so highly of, that it's good to make sure that you keep that connection going. And they also get excited seeing how and where your career leads
right.
you.
And they also, I think, all of them have shaped my approach to staff members. There isn't a person on the advancement staff here that I didn't hire. Hired everybody. Of course, I've been here for 20 years, and I've hired absolutely everybody. And I've had a chance to be a mentor to some of them, and I learned how to do that from others. So.
Yes. Well, that's wonderful. So another thing that I heard that you are very fond of is the show Wicked. that one of your favorite songs is actually from Wicked. And yes, they did highlight that in your video. But I had the opportunity of going and seeing it here when it was in Fresno. And it was such a great performance. And so then when I heard that that was one of your favorites, I thought, oh, that's perfectly fitting that Dr. Smits would enjoy that. And then they had given you a gift of a beautiful writing instrument, a pen. And that's another thing that I do. I collect pens. And my family has always teased me over it. They're like, oh, Mom, come on. Could you do something a little more exciting? But I always appreciate, you know, the beauty of writing. And I think that it goes part to, if I had to think of one word to describe you, I would say gentleman.
Thank you.
And every interaction that I've ever had with you, I have felt that you were the example. It's interesting that you said that your family was the Leave It to Beaver family. I felt like you're just a genuine gentleman. And from the time we went to that first lunch, and then when we had our star day here on campus, and you'd led the workshop on graciousness, and I asked you, how did you decide to do graciousness? And you said that someone else had asked you to do that. And I thought, that's even better than you coming up with it yourself. It's when someone says, you know what, I think that you would be a great person to talk about graciousness.
And that's what happened.
That in you and ask you to do a presentation.
And talk a little bit about the preparation you did for that workshop and some of the response and feedback that you've had afterwards.
Well, of course, it never occurred to me to do a workshop on the art of graciousness. And it was true. Someone on our staff had come up and said, you should do this. And I didn't have a clue how to do this. So I did spend several weeks researching the topic, and I wanted to make sure that I wasn't just standing up there lecturing. That's no fun. It's mm-hmm. boring. So I found some videos that I thought were appropriate to the topic, and
I
know where you're going. The first video I showed was actually to demonstrate what graciousness is not,
uh-huh.
and it was the Three Stooges smacking each other around. That was
so
funny.
Hilarious, and it was unexpected.
Right.
Everybody that was there was, you know, you really caught us off guard with that one.
Yeah, and it led to not only an examination of some of the characteristics of graciousness, but mm-hmm. it ended with a notion that in order to be gracious, you have to be grateful for what you have, and it ended with a little video about gratefulness, which I think half the people in the room had a tear in their eye after that one.
Yeah.
It was great.
Yes, it was.
So for me, it was, it's not a topic I would have explored mm-hmm. naturally. So I actually appreciate the chance to do it because it gave me an opportunity to explore something that I never would have explored. It was fun.
And I think that it was something that you lived by example, but identifying that characteristic in yourself, it's sometimes difficult for people to do. But one thing that I appreciated too is that if a person has not been exposed to a gracious way of living, it was good the way you laid it out for them to see that if you've not experienced graciousness and if it's not something that comes natural for you, these are some steps you can take to kind of integrate it into your life. Start doing these little steps and treating people in a gracious way. And, you know, it does come back to you and how it changes the environment of where you work, of your mm-hmm. personal relationships. It's something that I think the whole campus can benefit from.
Well, it can be a learned behavior. I mean, there are certain things that you can do. Mm-hmm. One of the things we talked about, speaking of penmanship, was writing thank you notes. President Bush I, George H.W., right? Uh-huh. He was famous for sending notes. He would write 3 or 4 notes to people at the end of every day. And he used to say, you keep a little pad of paper by your desk.
Mm-hmm.
And when it occurs to you that someone should get a note, write their name down. And then at the end of the day, just write the note. And that's, if you can discipline yourself to do that, it makes a big difference.
And I think especially today with all the electronic ways of communicating, there is still something very special about receiving a handwritten note. Even if it isn't a long note, just for you to know that that person took the time out of their day to make that effort to thank you for whatever it was that you did.
I've had this habit for years of sending birthday cards to staff.
Uh-huh.
And so, and I write a little note in everybody's card. And there's two things about that. One is people like to get them.
Yeah.
But they also remember if you forget, right? So I've had a couple of cases where I've forgotten to send a card, and I get reminded of that. But people really do appreciate the time it takes to write a little handwritten note. It's not hard to do.
And they begin to look forward to it. So I think that one example of the impact that you've had on this campus and how much of a help that you have been to President Castro in the transition into the position is that this year has been a fantastic fundraising year for the campus and that you're getting to go out with a big bang. And mm-hmm. I love it. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Well, of course, we are not in a campaign.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the one of the purposes of having a campaign is to raise the whole level of fundraising. Mm-hmm. You never want to go back to where you were when you started. You want to float the whole boat, as they say. So for us, it was important to not go back to the level of where we were before. And this year, we are at least going to raise $37 million. It could go over 40. I don't know.
Wonderful.
There's only a week to go.
Yeah.
but $37 million is the second highest that we've had in the history of the university. And
oh, that's wonderful.
It's, I mean, I'm happy for the whole campus and especially for my staff. And I'm personally happy to go out and with that number. That's great.
Yes.
So it's been quite a year, actually.
Well, thank you so much for all of your help in helping President Castro and myself in our new roles here on the campus, and also for your many years of service on this campus and to the community. I know that you're going to go on and do great things, and that I'm looking forward to reading the results of your study that you're doing and the book and hearing about all your travels, because that sounds like that's a little extra perk on it. But especially thanking you for your service here at the campus and for being a part of one of the great things at Fresno State.
Well, I appreciate that. This is a very special place to me, always will be, and it's been an honor to be here.
Thank you, Peter.
You're welcome.
Well, thanks again to our very special guest, the Vice President for University Advancement at California State University, Fresno, Dr. Peter Smits. And of course, my co-host, Fresno State's First Lady, Mrs. Mary Castro. Thanks for joining us this morning. And please join us again next Sunday morning at 10 for another First Lady's Focus on KFSR. We're on the air at 90.7 FM and streaming worldwide at www.kfsr.org.
KFSR presents First Lady's Focus every Sunday morning at 10. For a complete program schedule, visit kfsr.org.